Hello, and welcome to the Finding Emet radio program. Emet is the Hebrew word for truth. This program will help you understand and live the truth of the Bible from a Hebrew perspective. The Finding Emet radio program features the teaching ministry of Brother Daniel Rendelman of Emet Ministries. Prepare your heart to receive the Emet, the truth of the Scriptures. More audio lessons and teaching articles are available at the www.emetministries.com website. Please visit our site to find all things spiritual, including a free online Bible search program, or submit your prayer request. That's www.emetministries.com or www.findemet.com. CD copies of this teaching are available for free by submitting a request at the website. Let's welcome our teacher, Daniel Rendelman, as he helps us find the Emet.
So I want to start and ask you a question. What is better than a miracle? Another miracle. Good answer. What is better than a miracle? But maybe another miracle, okay? A continuous miracle or a continuous blessing, is that what you said? All right, so there, would we say that there are some things better than miracles? Miracles are nice, aren't they? They're good, they're tov, we like to have miracles. Have you had a miracle before? Experienced the miraculous power of Yahweh, maybe through prayer? I know someone here had prayed, they had a lump in their chest and prayed and was hands were laid upon them. And not in that area, but they were laid upon them, and they were healed. Healed of, just went away, totally. I remember one time I had a car that broke down, remember that? And it was dead. It was dead as a doornail. I mean, it should have had the last rites pronounced to it. And we laid our hands on it and prayed for it. Crunk up, couldn't believe it, wasn't supposed to, and the person driving it drove it for like 7 miles the whole time while he was praying and just couldn't believe it worked. It worked. So what about you? Other miracles that we know of, if we know that they still occur, right? We believe in miracles that are still there. So the question is, what's better than a miracle? I mean, miracles are wonderful things. This doctor was known for extraordinary miracles. I mean, he had the not really miracle power, but he had a way to treat arthritis that it was great. People would come to him and they would be healed. They, you know, had certain creams and different things they would use. And so he had a waiting room full of people. This little old lady was almost bent over in half. She just shuffled her body in. She had this cane. She was leaning on her cane. And when she came in, and she waited, she made kind of a big scene, and she went in to see the doctor, and she went in, and within 5 minutes, she walked out completely erect, straight up. It was amazing. She held her head high. She'd been healed. So a woman in the waiting room that had seen her rushed up to the little old lady and said, "It's a miracle, it's a miracle." He said, you walked bent in half, and now you're walking straight as can be. What did the doctor do? And, of course, the little old lady said, "Well, he just gave me a longer cane." So, a longer cane. Sorry. Oh, it just wasn't funny. Is that what it was? Okay. There are miracles, and there are things that we think are miracles that aren't really miracles. So for somebody to say, "Oh, well, it's a miracle. My son came home from Iraq alive." Well, was that a miracle? Depends on where he was, right? Maybe it was just a provision. Maybe it was just a blessing. Maybe it was a miracle or so. When these miracles occur, a miracle is when Yahweh does something that defies logic. Think of the miracle of the manna, when they would just wake up and it would be there. You ever had a miracle like that before? Wasn't expecting it, didn't ask for it, really? And it was just there. Or maybe you did ask for it. Maybe you prayed and prayed and prayed, and it did happen. Yahweh is still in the miracle business, right? And there are miracles that do occur, and we've seen them occur. We've prayed for people. They've been healed, and we know that occurs. That we are products of Yahweh's miracle power, miraculous power, amen, that he could save us, he could set us free. A miracle is what Yahweh uses to deliver us out of a crisis. A blessing is what Yahweh uses to keep us out of a crisis in the first place. Does that make sense? So you could say, oh, it's a miracle if I got $1 million in my bank account. You know, wow, it's a miracle. It just happened. Now, that doesn't happen very often, does it? Blessing is I've got a job and I've been able to save and I've got $1,000 in my bank account or maybe $1 million. Who knows what you have? That's that blessing. It's that preventative maintenance. So go back to the automobile situation. If you maintain your automobile and you put the oil in it and you gas it up right and you take good care of it, put new tires on it, that's a blessing, right? It works for a long, long, long time. But a miracle would be that you wait until it's just dead and then you pray it back to life. And some people, that's how they live their faith. They just wait until it's just dead. There's not a lot going into it. And then they just hope to pray it back to life or sing it back to life or read it back to life or whatever it happens to be. And some people go that route. You know, folks that, you know, show up and worship and then live like the devil the rest of the week and then do their thing. Blessings are every day. And you could say, well, miracles are every day. There's a child born every day and I eat at McDonald's and I don't get sick, and that's a miracle right there. I mean, you could say those are miracles, right? But blessings are every day, because we've all experienced some of those miracles. It's things that Yahweh provides those blessings for. Yeshua said that if you had the faith the size of a seed of mustard, you could move mountains. So how much faith does it take to be powerful in the kingdom of heaven? A lot of faith? Great faith? Just a little bit of faith? So there are some methods to Yahweh's faithfulness and blessings, and that's what we're going to discuss today. It happens to come out of the Torah portion, Ki Tavo, which in Hebrew stands for when you enter. When you enter, and some of the study topics are going to be joy, tithing, offerings, the people of Yahweh, curses, and then finally, what does all this mean today? So turn with me first to the book of Devarim. That's Hebrew for words. Book of Deuteronomy, chapter 26, at verse 1. We're going to start in verse 1. Verse 1. And it shall be when thou art come into the land which Yahweh thy Elohim gives thee for an inheritance and possesses it, and dwells therein, that thou shalt take of the first of all the fruit of the earth, which thou shalt bring of thy land, that Yahweh thy Elohim gives thee, and shalt put it in a basket, and shalt go into the place which Yahweh thy Elohim shall choose, to the place his name there. Thou shalt go unto the priest that shall be in those days, and say unto him, I profess this day unto Yahweh, that I am come to the country which Yahweh swore unto our fathers to give us. And the priest shall take the basket out of thine hand, and set it down before the altar of Yahweh thy Elohim, and thou shalt speak and say before Yahweh, a Syrian ready to perish was my father. He went down into Egypt, sojourned there with a few, and became a nation, great, mighty, and populous. And the Egyptians' evil entreated us, and afflicted us, and laid upon us hard bondage. And when we cried unto Yahweh Elohim, our fathers, Yahweh heard our voice. He looked upon our afflictions, our labor, and our oppression. And Yahweh brought us forth out of Egypt with a mighty hand, with an outstretched arm, with a great terribleness, with signs and with wonders. And he brought us into this place. He hath given us this land, even a land that flows with milk and honey. Verse 10. And now behold, I have brought the first fruits of the land, which thou, O Yahweh, hast given me. And thou shalt set it before Yahweh thy Elohim, and worship before Yahweh thy Elohim. Verse 11. And thou shalt rejoice in every good thing which Yahweh thy Elohim hath given unto thee, and unto thine house, and the Levite, and the stranger that is among you. And so here in the first 11 verses of chapter 26 of Deuteronomy, we see that when they come into the land, that they are to, of course, have the produce, the first fruits of the land, and bring it forward. The best of the crop to bring it to Yahweh, to present it to Yahweh, and to give it to Him. And as they did that, they were to remind themselves that they were in Egypt. They cried unto Yahweh. Yahweh heard their affliction, and Yahweh delivered them. So they were not to live their life off of their paycheck and then bring whatever was left over. They were to bring the first fruits of their harvest and then proclaim the goodness of Yahweh. And look at verse 11. Look at verse 11, which is key for us. And it says, 10 and 11 here, "Therefore, as you see, I have now brought the first fruits of the land which you, Yahweh, have given me. You are then to put the basket down before Yahweh your Elohim, prostrate yourself before Yahweh. Take joy in all the good that Yahweh your Elohim has given you, your household, the Levite, and the foreigner living with you." So, as we see this here, that their worship was to start with joy. Joy. It says that take joy in all the good that Yahweh your Elohim has given you. You know, joy is supposed to be a power, a witness, an example that we are Yahweh's. The joy of Yahweh, not just happiness, not just, oh, I'm happy, but the joy of Yahweh is supposed to be this foundation of who we are. And here, it says that as they get ready to worship, that it was to begin with joy in all the good that Yahweh did. Now, let me ask you, why do you think there's this emphasis on joy? Now, we know, because we have the New Testament, oh, it's the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace. Joy is one of the fruit of the Spirit. We know that. But he's saying here that when you come and you present your best to do it with a joyful heart, and as you rejoice before Yahweh, it's changing your nature. You see, it's not in the human nature to give. A similar passage out of Psalm 100, a psalm of thanksgiving. "Shout for joy to Yahweh, all the earth. Serve Him with gladness. Enter into His presence with joyful songs. Be aware that Yahweh is Elohim. It is He who has made us. We are His people, the flock of His pasture. Enter His gates with thanksgiving. Enter His courtyards with praise. Give thanks to Him and bless His name. For Yahweh is good. His graciousness continues forever. His faithfulness lasts through all the generations." This joy is the nature of Yahweh. But it's not in our nature to be joyful. It's not in our nature to be giving and kind. That's in the nature of the Spirit. You see, the flesh is selfish. The flesh looks out for me, myself, and I, doesn't it? And so the flesh is going to always walk around with a chip on its shoulder or upset or mad or offended. And so the question is, if our nature is not joyful, then what is our source? Because if the spiritual nature, if the fruit of the Spirit is joy, and we're not joyful, then what fruit are we having? If we're not thankful, if we're not serving Yahweh with gladness, if we're not coming with joyful songs, if we're not shouting for joy with all the earth. There's something to be said for this. It's a choice. Because we all go through stuff, right? We all go through stuff. We all have a little thing called life. And we have ups and downs. We have peaks and valleys. We have good days and bad days. And yet, we have to make the choice. Pain is inevitable. We will all go through pain in life. Misery is optional. So is joy. Joy is optional. So can we come into His house? Can we shout before Him? Can we serve Him? Can we be aware of it? He is Elohim. Can we enter into his gates if we're not joyful? What does it say? The joy of Yahweh is our what? It is our strength. It says to shout for joy, serve him with gladness, enter his presence with joyful songs, enter his gates with thanksgiving, give thanks and bless his name. If we come together to worship and we wish we had more strength, then we're really asking for more simchat. That's the Hebrew word for joy. Because joy generates strength. Did you know that? You wake up and you're in a good mood. Man, you can get the house cleaned. You wake up, you're feeling good. You're joyful. You're happy to be alive. You're happy to be around. You've got physical energy. You've got a smile on your face. So you've got emotional energy. And then you're thanking Yahweh. You've got spiritual energy. You see, joy generates strength. When it says that the joy of Yahweh is our strength, it's saying here that that's where this comes from. And yet, it says that the opposite of joy, what's the opposite of joy? There you go. Sadness, depression, stress. Now, this doesn't mean that you've got to walk around like you're high, you know? But it means that we have this inward joy that comes out of us, that people know that we're different. People know that we're different, all right. They're like, oh my gosh, I don't want to be around that person. Or is it people know that we're different and they say, oh my gosh, I want to be around that person. What is it that's in Melanie's life or in Daniel's life or in Gregory's life or Jeremiah's life that says joy? Isn't that what it says? The kingdom of Yahweh is about peace, love, and joy, righteousness, and the Holy Spirit, and Ruach HaKodesh, not about what we eat or drink. So what are the effects on us? Think about this for a minute. When we're not joyful, what are the effects on us? It breaks our spirit down. It makes us more likely to have sickness. Did you know that? Because it says, laughter doeth good like medicine. I heard the story of someone that had cancer. She prayed about it. And she felt that Yahweh was going to heal her. Do you know what she did? She went and got verses about the healing power of Yahweh. She put them around her room. Then she went to the movies, to the Blockbuster or wherever it is, and rented as many movies, comedies that she could find. And every day as she went through the chemo, as she went through the treatments, as she lost her hair, she was watching comedies. From the black and whites, to the ones in the 70s, to the 80s, to the 90s. And do you know that they were not able to finish her chemo treatments because the cancer was gone before it was supposed to? And she attributes some of that to the power of joy. And yet the opposite of that is we don't have any desire to study, to pray, to help others. We become lethargic. And then it does affect others. I mean, think about it. Our lack of joy is pain upon us and gives a poor witness. When we're stressed out, we don't have any joy. Isn't that the opposite? You can't be joyful and stressed at the same time, can you? I'm preaching to myself. I'm stepping on my own toes. But it's impossible to be joyful in Yahweh and walking in the Spirit and be stressed out at the same time. And do you know what stress is? Stress is thinking about the outcome of something. That's really what stress is. Thinking about the outcome that you're not sure about. And you know what it does? It gets those stomach acids going, and then it gets your stomach feeling bad, and then you get to feeling bad, and then you bite somebody's head off, and they get to biting your head off, and you get into a fight, and this is all, you know, before you even have breakfast in the morning. And then it goes downhill from there. So this joy can be our strength. When we are not joyful, we show people that the path of Yahweh is hard. I know some people, they're believers. They're born again. They're spirit-filled. They're walking Torah. And you were to meet them, and they look like they've been baptized in pickle juice. They just had that look on their face. And you better not cross them. They'll bite your head off in a minute. Show, when we don't have the joy, it shows that our reward is futile. Think about it. Our reward is in Shemayim. Our reward is in the New Jerusalem to be in eternity with Yahweh. Shouldn't we be happy about that at least? If you don't have a dime to your name, we've got that eternal reward. So sometimes we look at ourselves, and I don't know about you, but I look at myself and I'm sick or I'm stressed or I don't have Yahweh's joy, and I say, gosh, I hope other people aren't like me. True discipleship is wanting people to be like you, reproducing yourself in other people. And that joy of Yahweh changes us. Did you know this? Enthusiasm and joy will reach people when our arguments will not. You see, we can argue all day long that Torah is for today. We can have a sit-down with the Baptist preacher, you know? I can have a knockdown, drag-out fight with the Pentecostal pastor. And I can talk about, is Torah for today? Is it not for today? What about the laws of kosher? What about this? What about stoning? What about that? But if I don't have the joy of Yahweh, my words are like banging cymbals, right? Our joy, and boy, we're excited. When we're excited about something, you can feel it. You know, I don't know about you, but I'm excited about the fall feast days. I'm excited about Sukkot. I love Sukkot. I'm excited about the Feast of Trumpets. I'm not so excited about the Day of Atonement. It's a day with no food. But I'm excited about the fall feast days. I am. And you know what I do when I'm excited about something? I tell people about it. And I invite people. And I talk about it. Yet sometimes we're not excited. We don't have that joy. And we're not talking. We're not inviting. We're not saying. And guess what? People don't want to follow in the first place. When we have a lack of joy, it opens the door for HaSatan to turn our blessings into curses. Galatians chapter 5. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, and peace. So if we have love, joy, and peace, we're walking in the Spirit. And if at any given time, and this is hard, at any given time we're not showing love, joy, or peace, then perhaps we're not walking in the Spirit, and we're not walking in our divine nature that Yahweh has given us. Deuteronomy 28:47 says this. It lists in Deuteronomy 28, we'll go there, the curses that happen. It lists all these bad curses. Cursed you'll be in your city, cursed you'll be in your field, cursed you'll be in your basket, cursed you'll be in your storehouse, the fruit of your body, cursed you'll be when you come in, when you go out. You'll be cursed, you'll be cursed, you'll be cursed. And in Deuteronomy 28:47, it explains why these curses occur. It says, because you did not serve Yahweh, your Elohim, with joy and contentment. At the end of all these curses, it says, you didn't serve Yahweh with joy and contentment. You might have served Him. You might have done these things. You might have cried, Lord, Lord. But you're cursed because you didn't do it with joy and contentment. What does it mean to be content? Does it mean to be happy that you got everything you wanted? Or does it mean to be happy with what you got? That's true contentment, ain't it? Just to say, you know what? I sure wanted that BMW, but I sure got a Pontiac. Praise Yahweh, I'm happy. I'm happy. A lack of joy, a lack of contentment will result in a lifestyle of sin and curses. So we not only are called to obey, but to obey with joy. You know, that's the power of Yahweh. To obey with joy. So we're called to live in joy. And if we're not joyful, we dishonor Yahweh. It's so key. It's so important. So when we talk about blessings and we talk about miracles, miracles are great. And boy, we're happy when we have a miracle, right? A miracle occurs. What do we say? I can't believe it. We just prayed for it, but then I can't believe it. And then we're happy. Walking on cloud nine. We're excited. A miracle's happened. And yet that joy is that everyday strength, that everyday power. And as we continue to talk about miracles, of course, one miracle is a miracle of tithing. It just doesn't make logical sense. We're to give 10% to Yahweh? You've heard that story, that rich man that won the lottery. He said, okay, Yahweh, I'm going to draw a circle in the ground. I'm going to stand in the middle of the circle. And I'm going to throw up all this money. I got $40 million. And I want to give you what's due to you. So I'm going to throw it up in the air. And you keep whatever you want. And whatever falls down, I'm going to keep. You heard that story? Yeah. That's not quite it. But during the temple times, in Deuteronomy 26, there's this other miracle. In verse 22, it says, in verse 1, it says, when you come into the land and you dwell there, you shall take the first fruits of it and put it in a basket, and you shall do this. And you shall do this, and it says, the place where Yahweh has put his name. Thou shalt take the first of all the fruit of the earth, bring of thy land, give unto thee, put it in a basket, shall go into the place that Yahweh as Elohim shall choose to place his name there. Principle of tithing. One-tenth of everything of the seed produces. Eat it in the presence of Yahweh your Elohim. Okay? Now, there are a couple different tithes that are spoken about. It talks about later that if the distance is too far for you, you can convert it to money, take the money with you, go to the place which Yahweh chooses, and exchange it. It's another tithe. Then it talks about every 3 years you're to take the tenth of your produce, store it in your towns, and give it to the Levite. That's another tithe. So there are all these different tithes that took place during temple times. And if you were to calculate it, it would be about 24 to 26% of your pay of what they annually took in. Do you know of any churches that teach a 25% tithe? Any synagogues that teach that? No. Nobody's that brave. But during temple times, it was about their life revolving around their produce, their harvest, and revolving around the temple. And so they gave to help others. And then there were these offerings that were there that were separated. Verse 12. And when you made an end of your tithing, all the tithes of thine increase the third year, which is the year of tithing, you give unto the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, the widow, that they may eat with their gates and be filled. It was just offering to the poor and to the needy. So these tithes that have continued. I want to show you something very interesting. Not only were they commanded to give a tenth, not only were they commanded to give their first fruits, not only were they commanded to tithe extra on the third year, not only were they commanded to give extra to the poor, the widow, and the Levite, but when they were to gather together, they were to make a proclamation. They were to say this. Verse 13. But thou shalt say before Yahweh, I have brought away the hallowed things of my house. I've given them to the Levite, to the stranger, to the fatherless, to the widow, according to the commandments which you commanded me. Verse 14. I have not eaten anything in mourning. I have not put any of it aside when unclean. I have not given any of it for the dead. I have listened to what Yahweh has said, and I have done everything you ordered me to do. So when they brought these offerings, they were to make this proclamation. And it included, I have listened to what Yahweh, my Elohim, has said and have done everything you've ordered me to do. Now, what if on Sunday morning, it got time for the offertory, and the preacher said, okay, now when you come up, I want you to say these things. I haven't used it for mourning. I haven't given it while I was unclean. I haven't offered it to the dead. And I've listened to what Yahweh has said and have done everything he's ordered me to do. What if we were to do that when we had our offering? But you had to proclaim, you had to say, I'm giving the right portion publicly, state it. I'm doing everything Yahweh's ordered me to do. What if we made those conditions on our offerings? That would be something, wouldn't it? And do you know what it goes back to? It goes back to the question of the heart. How would you feel if you had to say that when you took an offering? Now, some people would say, well, I don't have any, or I don't have this, or, I can't help it, I was unclean, or, you know, this or that. You know, pass those excuses or whatever. What if we were to state, when you give an offering, you make this proclamation? And by saying it, and by verbalizing it, we would either be convicted because we're lying, right? Or we would feel the comfort of the Ruach HaKodesh saying you've done the right thing. Your actions and your words line up. Now, I used to teach, everybody say used to teach, something called Torah tithing, to where you would take the tithe and you would break it up yourself just like this. I'd done all the math and gotten with another rabbi to do that. And I used to teach that when you tithed, you would take a percentage to give it to the priest. You would take a percentage and give it to the worship center. You would take a percentage and use for the feast. You would take a percentage and give to the needy. And therefore, that 10% would be broken up into smaller percentages. And that is similar to how the tithing was done when people lived in the land when the temple was standing. But how many know we don't live in the land and the temple's not standing? Now, we read the verse that states if, you know, you can convert it to money, Deuteronomy 26. You know, you can convert it to money if you need to. We read that verse that states that. And that was the reasoning behind that teaching. But my further study has kind of led me to personally believe and teach that tithing predates the law of Moses. Abraham met Melchizedek. Melchizedek was the priest of Yahweh. Abraham gave the tithe unto the priest of Yahweh. He gave to him a tenth of the bounty that he had received from the battle that he had just had. During the temple times, they brought that tenth as well to the priest. Later, that continued. And I believe that's the way that we can do that today. It's one way to do that today. I think we get into trouble when we try to divide the tithe ourselves because it doesn't get divided. We forget or we use it for other things or whatever happens. So our family has moved away from that personally. This isn't a teaching on tithing. I just want to throw that out there. There are various and sundry doctrines on tithing that are out there. However, when we look at the offerings, for an offering to be ritually pure, the money couldn't have been given for the dead, given while someone was unclean, you know, given while they were mourning, or given out of disobedience. There's some things for us to think about. I've read this Torah portion for years. I don't ever remember seeing this part. So, really interesting. Deuteronomy 27. Let's turn there. In verse 9 and 10, you can read it with me here. Next, Moshe and the Kohanim, who are Levi'im, spoke to all Israel. They said, "Be quiet and listen, Israel. Today you have become the people of Yahweh your Elohim. Therefore you are to listen to what Yahweh your Elohim says, obey his mitzvot and laws, which I'm giving you today." The people of Yahweh are set aside here, and they are chosen to bless and to be a blessing. Because this is where he says, okay, some of you go stand on this mountain, some of you go stand on that mountain, we'll proclaim the blessings or the curses in the Torah portion. What's interesting here, though, is that it says, today you have become the people of Yahweh. The day in which they choose to obey and to follow his voice is the day in which they became the people of Yahweh. And yet, the scriptures go in and begin to list in Deuteronomy 27 some things. Let's take a look. Because it begins to list some curses. Look at verse 15. "Cursed be the man that makes any graven or molten image, an abomination unto Yahweh, the work of his hands, the craftsman, putteth in a secret place, and all the people shall answer," what? "Amen." "Cursed be him that dishonors his father and mother, that moves his neighbor's boundary marker, causes a blind person to lose his way, that interferes with justice for the foreigner, orphan, or widow. Curses any man that has sexual relations with his father's wife. He's violated his father's rights. Has sexual relations with any kind of animal. Has sexual relations with his sister, no matter whether she is the daughter of his father or his mother. Has sexual relations with his mother-in-law. Secretly attacks a fellow member of the community. Accepts a bribe to kill an innocent person." And it goes on to give these curses. And then in verse 26, it said something that will speak to us all. "Cursed be him that confirms not all the words of the law to do them." If you don't confirm the words of Torah, then it says here, there's a curse upon you. Now these curses that are listed from verse 15 to 25, it's pretty neat that they line up exactly with the Ten Commandments. I'm going to show you this. Because as we obey Torah, as we live Torah, and we share Torah, the Ten Commandments encompass a lot. And it's something people are familiar with. And so we can share the Ten Commandments, because most people don't even know half of them. But we can share the Ten Commandments with people, and then go back and show them how the rest of the Torah explains those ten basic commandments. Let's talk about it. The Ten Commandments. "Have no other Elohim before me. Do not make a graven image. Do not misuse the name of Yahweh. Do not defile the Shabbat. Do not dishonor your father and mother. Do not murder. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not give false witness. Do not covet." So this first one here, it says, "Curses any man who makes a carved metal image, something that Yahweh detests." Which one of the Ten Commandments would this violate? Which one would that match? "Do not make or worship any graven image." And so here it goes on to say, if you do that, you will be cursed. There's a curse upon you if you do that. So how do we apply that today? It's interesting that these graven images are something that people would go and bow down before, right? And they'd spend their time there. They'd give their money there. They would worship. What in modern America do people sit around, spend a lot of their time bowing before, even some money, spending money on it? No, talk about QVC. I'm not talking about the Home Shopping Channel. Think about it. Is that not a graven image, a carved image? And think of the things that are on it. Now, I have a TV. It's a great thing to put a VCR on top of. That's about all I get to use it for. That and Barney. But do you think that that can be someone's God? Their graven image? All right, what about this one? "A curse on anyone who dishonors his father and mother." That's pretty simple, isn't it? because the Ten Commandments say, honor your father and mother. And it says, actually, that's the first commandment with a promise, that your days may be long in the land. But then it says, if you don't, you will be cursed. So children, how do you dishonor your father and mother? How do you dishonor your father and mother? By not being obedient? By calling them by their first name? And it says here, there will be a curse upon you. All right, what about this one? Cursed is he who moves his neighbor's boundary marker. Cursed is he who moves his neighbor's boundary marker. How could that? I think I heard it. You're stealing land. You know, oh, he won't see it. He won't see it. I got a pipe that's burst. I'm going to move that boundary marker. Oh, it's going to go this side of the pipe, right? Cursed is a man that does that. You know, where I live, our neighbors are right nearby. You know, it's like our house, and then 20 feet over is their house. And I don't really know where our boundary part ends. And so on the few times that I actually cut the grass, I never know where to stop. Because I don't know where his grass starts and my grass ends. So I don't know. So I usually cut a little bit extra just to make sure. Just to make sure, but I thought I was being a good neighbor. However, could not my neighbor think to himself, oh, does he think his land goes all the way this far? Couldn't he get that impression? Think about that. He could. Now, you can't ever know what people are saying. I bring that up to state this, that it's the meaning behind some of this. When the Torah says, do not steal, it also means don't move your neighbor's boundary marker. When the Torah says, for example, do not give a false witness, it means don't cause a blind person to lose his way on the road. When the Torah says, do not commit adultery, it means don't look upon a woman with lust in your eyes. When the Torah says, do not murder, what did Yeshua say? Do not look a person with hate in your eyes. You see, these 10 that we've been given, you could go all the way down and make this huge flow chart of what it really means. And that's what the 613 commandments really are. These curses line up directly with the Ten Commandments. So let's go back to miracles and blessings. If you're walking in obedience, you're going to be blessed, right? You're going to have that atmosphere of blessing, that environment, that potential for blessing. You may not need that miracle because Yahweh will be with you. Look at this. In Deuteronomy 27:19, curses anyone who interferes with justice of the foreigner, orphan, or widow. Again, the Torah is expounding upon do not give a false witness. Do not lie. Isn't that amazing? But these Ten Commandments are listed here. How about these? A curse on anyone who has sexual relations with his father's wife, or with an animal, or with his sister, no matter whether she is a daughter of his father or his mother, or his mother-in-law. Wouldn't that line up with the principle of committing adultery? The principle of sexual immorality? A curse on anyone who secretly attacks a fellow member of his community. Where would that go? What does that match up with? Secretly attack somebody in his community. Could it go with coveting? Why would you attack somebody in the community unless you wanted something from them? You wanted them to go down. It could go down to murder. That's right. Secretly attacks. Whispers. Lashon Hara. Talking about people. You see, when the Torah says do not covet, it means all these things. That's why it's so important we study it and we're in it and we learn it. A curse on anyone who accepts a bribe to kill an innocent person. That one's easy, isn't it? Thou shalt not murder. All right, let's continue. It says, Yahweh will establish you as a people separated for himself, as he has sworn to you. If you observe the mitzvot of Yahweh your Elohim and follow his ways, then all the people of the earth will see that Yahweh's name, his presence is with you, that you may be afraid of you. 28, 9 and 10. Yahweh shall establish you as a holy separated people out for himself, as he's sworn to you. If you observe the commandments of Yahweh, follow his ways, and all the people of the earth will see that his presence is with you. That's why he's given us his commandments, so that people would see that his presence is with us. Now look at verse 9, though. It says, therefore, observe the words of the commandment and obey them so that you can do, and everything you do shall prosper. That is in chapter 29, verse 9. Keep the words of this covenant and do them that you may prosper in all that you do. Why do you think that's difficult for some theologians in Christianity? That's a difficult verse, isn't it? Because they don't think the Torah is for today. Because the message of Deuteronomy is keep Yahweh's Torah. They had it for 1,400 years before Yeshua. Did Yahweh suddenly change his mind when Yeshua came, when the Messiah came? No, we know that. But many theologians, many people will state that. Yahweh has not canceled his word. It is the same. And so he longs for us to return and to repent and to seek his face as we obey Torah, as we observe and obey. You see, we've been called to go beyond the letter of the law. We've been chosen of Yahweh, Judah and Ephraim, as a path to his relationship with him. And as we prepare for the fall feast days, it's a time of purification and renewal. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 1 through 3, it says, therefore, I, the prisoner, united with Yahweh, beg you to lead a life worthy of the calling to which you've been called. Always be humble, gentle, and patient, bearing with one another in love, making effort to preserve the unity the Spirit gives through the binding power of shalom, through peace. Let that one sink in, that we are to lead a life worthy of the calling. Not of the curses, but of the calling of blessing. That we are always to be humble, gentle, and patient. Humble, gentle, and patient. Bearing with one another. When people describe you, do they say, well, that person is humble, gentle, and patient? They bear with people. They preserve the unity. That's what we are supposed to be striving for. Remember, Deuteronomy 28:9, it says, Yahweh will establish us as a people set apart for himself so that all the people of the earth will see Yahweh's name. It's that obedience with the moral character being established. Ephesians 4:29, let no harmful language come from your mouth, only good words that are helpful in meeting the need, words that will benefit those that hear them. Don't cause grief to Yahweh's Holy Spirit. Don't grieve the Ruach HaKodesh, for he has stamped you as his property until the day of his final redemption. What causes the Ruach HaKodesh to be grieved more than anything but the words of our mouth which are harmful? We got to read things in context. We should only be speaking words that benefit and meet the need. You know, Mom always said, if it ain't got nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all. Here it says our words should be beneficial in meeting the need. And so Yahweh's Torah is above and beyond the letter. It affects our speech, our actions, and our thoughts. It goes back to that joy we talked about. So in Ephesians 4:29, it says, get rid of bitterness, rage, anger, assertiveness, slander, along with spitefulness. Instead, be kind to each other, tenderhearted, forgive each other, just as in the Messiah, Yahweh has forgiven you also. That Yahweh has us these blessings and curses. He calls us out to be a people of blessing. To be a blessing to the world, to be a blessing to each other, to speak words that benefit, and to be kind to one another. And it's a choice. It's a choice that we have to make. Perhaps the biggest word in the English language is two letters. It's the word if. It's the word if. And it shall come to pass, if thou shalt hear diligently the voice of Yahweh to observe and do all his commandments, which I command you this day, that Yahweh will set thee on high above all the nations of the earth. If you will observe to obey, if you are willing to listen to what Yahweh says, all of his commandments, he will raise us high, and the blessings will be ours in abundance. Now again, we sometimes get confused about blessings. We think Donald Trump is rich because he's keeping Torah. No, he's not. Rosie O'Donnell is not a Torah keeper, even though she's a millionaire. But if we take time to read and study these blessings and then see what they mean, when it says that Yahweh will make you the head and not the tail, doesn't mean you're going to be in that horse costume with you're the head and somebody else is the tail. He's going to make you the head and make your enemy the tail, and you're going to walk around like the dragons like in China? That's not what it means. It means he's given you this potential and environment for blessing that you can walk in it. And as we prepare for the feast days, we have to do something. This verse came to my attention this week, and it stopped me in my tracks. Hear this. 2 Corinthians 7:1. Because we've talked about the promises of blessing. We've talked about how Yahweh's called us out to be a nation set apart for himself. We've talked about the tithing. We've talked about the joy that Yahweh gives us, his strength. It says, since we have these promises, dear friends, let us purify ourselves from everything that contaminates body and spirit, perfecting holiness out of reverence for Yahweh. So since we have the promises of the Torah, of blessing, of eternal life, guess what it says we have to do then? Purify ourselves. We're not waiting on Yahweh to do it, and we're not doing somebody else. We're purifying ourselves from everything that contaminates us. But look at where we're contaminated, in body and in spirit. In body, in flesh and blood, and in spirit. And as we do that, we are perfecting holiness out of fear for Yahweh. Problem is, most people don't fear Yahweh anymore. We fear his judgment, but we don't fear him. And so we never purify ourselves. Here it says to purify yourself from everything that contaminates your body and your spirit. That should be our prayer. As we begin to read over the Torah, people that need miracles, even though they're great and we are in a need for them sometimes, I submit to you this day that many times they're needing a little more purification. Because sometimes we don't walk in Yahweh's blessings. Give an example. I'll talk about me for a minute here. Eat what I want, don't get no sleep, stressed out, burn the candle at both ends, up in the morning, you know, staying up late at night, busy, 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 busy. Stressed out about work, stressed out about home, stressed out about ministry. And so guess what? My stomach starts to cause me problems. Acid reflux. That stress is playing a part in my body. My body is not at ease. It is at dis-ease. That's what disease is. When your body is not at ease, it's dis-ease. And therefore, I go have some tests run. Gosh, I hope I don't have cancer. I could have this, could have that. Their biopsy's done. And I'm just praying for a miracle. Yahweh, I just pray everything's all right. You heal me real quick and I'm okay. Knowing that I'm just going to be as busy tomorrow as I was today. And when Yahweh's speaking and saying, look, I'll give you that blessing. I'll give you that miracle. I'll give you that miracle. But wouldn't it be better to walk in my blessings? And so that blessing can come as I purify myself from everything that contaminates my body and spirit. So I cut out some food that was contaminating my body. Cut out some habits contaminating my body. cut out some things that were contaminating my spirit. And therefore, I can walk in the blessings that He's given us. But if we're continually asking for that miracle after miracle after miracle, I submit to you today, we got to do some purifying. And today is a good time to do it. Amen. So we talked about this joy. We talked about these things. The Torah is to change us into His image. And it starts with joy. Yahweh's Spirit. We give our best with our offerings. We're to walk in His calling that He's given us and then live in those blessings. And then finally, what we can learn from the Torah portion is to purify ourselves from everything that contaminates us. Those that were disobedient, those that were rebellious, were not able to enter into the promised land, were they? They were stopped. Even Moses was stopped. That's a high calling He has upon us. That's a high calling. And the where we, how we get there is not by doing what we did yesterday. We got to do things different. We bought a piece of exercise equipment a couple weeks ago. Have y'all seen on TV the Ab Circle Pro? Oh yeah, you put your knees on it and you do this, and your abs are going to be like washboard. I have a keg right now. I'm going to get a six-pack one day. But anyway, this thing, you sit on it and you do this. And it sat in our house for a week in the box because I knew I couldn't put it together. Then we got Steven to put it together. And it sat in the house for another week, just filling up space, just sitting there. It's not going to do us any good until we use it, right? Until we jump on it 3 minutes a day and miracles will happen. Isn't that what it says? Only 3 minutes a day and your life will change. Everything will be better. 3 minutes a day and I'm going to be looking good. Okay, it'll take me longer than that. I know. 3 minutes a day. But until we use it, it's never going to help us. We got to do something different. If we always do what we've always done, we'll always get what we've always got. So we have to change our behavior. We have to change our thinking and purify ourselves. So as we look into this this Torah portion this week, I pray that this has been a blessing to you, because as I began to study this, Yahweh really spoke to me about the joy of Yahweh, and that His joy is a good indication if we're walking in the Spirit or not. And if we're not joyful, then we're probably not walking in the Spirit. Now, yes, you can have that righteous indignation and get all mad at certain things, but that joy is there to give us strength. And as we walk in His ways, the blessings are listed. They're there for us. The big question is if we will obey. Let me read that verse one more time and we'll finish with that. If you will listen to what Yahweh your Elohim says, observing and obeying all His commandments which I give you today, then Yahweh your Elohim will raise you high above all the nations, and the following blessings will be yours in abundance.
Thank you again for listening to the Finding EMET radio program. Please visit our website to learn more about the EMET, the truth of the Scriptures. Search the Bible, submit your prayer request, or read an article on various subjects. The website is www.findemet.com. That's www.findemet.com. CD copies of this teaching are available for free by submitting a request at the website. Or write to us at EMET Ministries, 1310 Trent Street, Newberry, South Carolina, 29108. That's EMET Ministries, 1310 Trent Street, Newberry, South Carolina, 29108. Thank you again for listening to Finding EMET with Daniel Rendleman. May you find the EMET, and may the truth set you free.